Tom Hall. This is Midday. As families across the country gather for Thanksgiving this week, a story about finding family. Through a combination of technology and serendipity, earlier this year, a brother born in Vietnam and living in England and a sister who grew up in Columbia, Maryland, discovered each other decades after they were born. Today on Midday, that brother and sister talk about getting to know each other and what genetic testing can teach us all about possibility and privacy. Lisa Welchman is a tech entrepreneur and an expert in digital governance who lives in Baltimore. Daryl Loden is a former musician working in human resources who lives in Kingston upon Thames, outside of London. Their story of finding each other and the bonds of family when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. As families travel and gather together for Thanksgiving here in the United States, today, a conversation with two people whose interactions with genetic databases led to revelations about their family that no one in the family had known before. The story of Lisa Welchman and Daryl Loden is poignant and heartwarming. Daryl is in his 40s, Lisa is in her 50s, and just last spring, they discovered that they are half-brother and sister. Today on Midday, we'll hear their story and talk about how they came to know each other after decades of not having even the slightest inkling that the other existed. We'll talk about what it has meant for them and for the rest of their family. And we'll also talk about the intended and unintended consequences of the fast-growing consumer genetic testing industry. When we submit our DNA to companies like Ancestry.com or 23andMe, do we retain control of how and by whom that information can be used? What is required of these companies when it comes to protecting the privacy of the millions of people who voluntarily share this private information? If you are one of those millions of people who have used a consumer genetic testing provider for whatever reason, we'd love to hear from you this hour. Our number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And you can also drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. But first, the incredible story of Daryl Loden and Lisa Welchman. Daryl Loden had a 20-year career as a professional musician. He's now working as an HR consultant. He lives in Kingston upon Thames in England, just outside of London, and he joins us today from the studios of the BBC in London. Daryl, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Doing great, and thanks for being with us today. And Lisa Welchman lives here in Baltimore. She is a tech entrepreneur who is considered the world's leading authority on digital governance. She joins me here in Studio A. Lisa, good to see you as well.
Good to see you, Tom.
So let me start with you, Lisa. Tell us where you were born, where you grew up, and what you're doing.
So I was born on the now-defunct base, Fort Ord, in California, while my dad was attending language school. Then did a tour of duty. He was in the Army with both my parents and my sister in Germany. And then we moved back to the Maryland area and were at Fort Holabird. Then we lived on Fort Meade. And we eventually settled down into Columbia, Maryland, where I went to school K through 12. So go Columbia.
There you go. Then, shout out to Columbia.
Yeah. I traveled a little bit, went to school in North Carolina, lived in New York for 10 years, and then cut my teeth in Silicon Valley for a few years, which is where I started doing what I do for a living as a digital governance consultant, and moved back to Baltimore in 2001.
Uh-huh. And tell us exactly what digital governance entails.
Well, it really is a discipline that helps organizations think a little bit more maturely about what they're doing with their digital spaces and with the information that they provide. So it was hard pushing for a while, but I think with what we're seeing in the news lately, people are beginning to understand that companies need to take a more mature approach.
It's important. And the other thing pertinent to this story today is that you really are a tech expert. You understand tech. And, of course, tech plays very prominently in this story. Daryl Loden, how about you? Where were you born? Where did you grow up? And what are you doing these days?
Cool. Well, I was born in Saigon and found myself as a refugee. And I was adopted by a British couple. My dad was a sergeant in the Royal Electrical Mechanical Engineers, posted to Hong Kong in the early 70s. And mum and dad had had difficulty having children of their own. And being posted to Hong Kong meant it was difficult for them, or nine, impossible, to adopt a child, a British child at least. So they just wanted a child desperately, and so they adopted me as a refugee from Vietnam. The incredible thing about that is not only was that a quite wonderful thing they did in the first place, but they did, after adopting me, manage to have a child of their own. And of course, that's my sister Hannah. And so they went to Hong Kong in the early 70s without any children and came back with two. And so we settled in Plymouth, which is down in the West Country. And I grew up there, and then and joined the army at 16, really. And as you said, I spent over 20 years in the army as a musician. Most of that time was with the Welsh Guards in London, and quite an incredible job. I really enjoyed it. And then made the move into HR when my army career finished, and I've lived in the Kingston area, well, for about 20 odd years, which is quite an incredible thing. And obviously, Lisa can tell you there's a link to Kingston for both of us.
Yes, indeed. And for folks who don't know the London area, tell us about how far is Kingston, for example, from downtown London?
Okay, Kingston is probably about 10, 12 miles southwest of London. So it's near Hampton Court for any Americans that have been doing their history of the UK when they pop over. So we're southwest London, on the River Thames. It's a leafy suburb, very nice town. It's an ancient market town originally. Mm-hmm. But lots of leafy space, really close to Richmond Park and Hampton Court Palace.
And Lisa, you got involved with DNA testing, what, 4 or 5 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, several years ago. My paternal grandfather was adopted. And so I was always curious, can we actually find that real sort of blood lineage with the family? And, you know, it's just something interesting to do. You can do that now. I'm a little bit of a tech geek. I'm not a bleeding edge adopter, but I'm a leading edge adopter. So I like to try things out so I can understand sort of where the strengths and weaknesses are and some of the issues were. So I had done that testing quite early on and then looped my family into it. We'd done 23andMe and we'd done MyHeritage this time, which was the information that I used and uploaded to GEDmatch.
So MyHeritage is another one of these companies like Ancestry.com,
right,
or 23andMe, et cetera. It's a separate one. And each of them have their own sort of strengths and things that they do slightly differently than the others. We'll talk about that in a minute. But so you went to MyHeritage, mm-hmm, and you uploaded your DNA to that database.
Well, I used that company to actually have the DNA done for everyone in my family. And once I got that information back, one of the things that you can do is download your raw DNA, raw genetic information, and upload it to this other website called GEDmatch, which is fairly open, relatively open. It's more research-based. And that's what I've done. It allows you to compare your genetic information against genetic information from someone else. So MyHeritage doesn't talk to 23andMe. 23andMe doesn't talk to my ancestry. So if you want to cut across through all of that, GEDmatch is a great place to put your information. So that's what I did.
Sort of beta versus VHS for those of us of a certain age.
Uh-oh.
Right. Uh-huh. And by all the members of your family, who does that include?
It was my son, my father, my mother, and myself.
Mm-hmm. And Daryl, how about you? How did you get involved in genetic testing all of a sudden?
Okay, well, it wasn't something I'd really thought about at all, actually. It kind of came from a conversation. I saw my GP last year just for a routine checkup because I'm over 40 now. And
it happens, Daryl.
It happens quite closer to 50 now, unfortunately. But no, it was a routine conversation, and inevitably it came round to, you know, family genetics and, you know, making lifestyle and health choices. And I was chatting to my sister, who works in cardiology. She's an echocardiac technician. If I've got that wrong, I'm sure she'll tell me. But she does ECG scans on people's hearts. And she said, well, we should maybe do a DNA test or something. And I must admit, I was not really that bothered by it. But both her and Juliet, her wife, very kindly bought me a DNA test for Christmas. And so I did the test, sent it off. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't really think much of it. Eventually, I did my test through Ancestry.com. And a few weeks later, it came back and it told me that, you know, a certain percentage was Black African American, certain percentage was Asian, and so on. And it kind of just put numbers to something that we'd always thought of but never really had scientific proof for. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't really give it a second thought after that. It had served its purpose. And so I think we were all a little bit surprised then what happened next. But at that time, that was literally my extent of DNA testing.
And Hannah, your sister, as a scientist, as a researcher, suggested you do this so that you could have some insight into any genetic predisposition for disease or stuff like that. Or, I mean, this was a sort of medical decision, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was usually, I'm not medically trained, and my knowledge is pretty limited, but my understanding is black and Asian people have a tendency to be more predisposed to heart disease, diabetes and the like. And my blood pressure was running a little high at the time. So, the GP just said, you know, we ought to be careful of that, mindful of it. And I think really that was Hannah and Juliet's motivation really for the test of how could we try to manage my health going forward? Because obviously they work at the other end when things have not gone quite as well. And so I think that was really our motivation. Nothing, we certainly didn't expect anything. And it kind of confirmed what we thought.
Yeah, and Lisa, explain for us what the difference is between GEDmatch, the GED match, and companies like Ancestry or 23andMe. They do have different purposes. You mentioned that GEDmatch came about really from researchers and academics, and these others are really they're for-profit companies that had a different motivation.
Yeah, I mean, I think 23andMe is health-focused. Ancestry.com is obviously ancestry-focused, and they're proprietary. And so you can't share information between the two of them. So if you're looking for an ancestor and your ancestor didn't use Ancestry.com and that's what you used, you're not going to find them. And so GEDmatch is more open, and you know, a lot of researchers are using it for very specific research projects around ethnicity, and other sorts of identity concerns. So it's interesting because I was a little bit taken aback when I first went on. I mean, it's quite open. You can use an alias or you can use your real name, but you must have an email address. So sort of laid right out there in the database are names and email addresses of all of these people. You can sort of take their kit number and do queries and find out information about other people's backgrounds. So it's quite, quite open. And so not everyone might choose to use that. You have to have an account. It's not like anyone can go in and do that. Not everyone might choose to do something like that, but I knew what I was getting into and I was going after it. So I went for that. And it's also not a for-profit type of venture on that side as well.
And what did you find when you went to GEDmatch?
When I went to GEDmatch, I had couldn't sleep one night and did a search at 1 o'clock in the morning and was doing a one-to-many search with my father's kit number and was expecting to find
me. So one-to-many.
Right.
That's a kind of search you do.
That's right.
And what kind of search does
it
entail?
So I'm taking his kit number and saying, tell me all of the people related, genetically related to this person, right? And so I was expecting to find myself, and I was expecting to find my son, Reese, because we're related to him. And so what I wasn't expecting, the results come back to you in the order of strength of relationship. So I was number one, then there was another person, and then there was my son. And so I was almost at the bottom of the page before it clicked in my brain that there was someone between my son and me. And so I went and looked, and there it was. It said Daryl Loudon, and it was, I think, a Sky email address, which I knew was England. And so I started doing a little bit of research on his kit number and saw the ethnicity and sort of dialed that together with time my dad had spent in Vietnam together with the whole story and thought, wow, I have a brother. So that was an interesting evening.
Yeah, and Daryl, forgive me, have I been pronouncing your name wrong? I've been calling you Loudon. Is it Loudon?
It's Loudon.
Oh, my bad.
Fine.
My bad. Excuse me.
I
got to get my DNA checked to see, you know, what kind of dummies I have in my background. So when you did your DNA testing, Daryl, you also found other relatives that you weren't necessarily aware of. I mean, Lisa found you, and we'll talk about that in a second. But what did you find when you went through this process yourself?
Well, I actually, as I say, I did my test with Ancestry.com, and after a point in time, a lady contacted me to say, I think my mother is related to you. And I was thinking, okay, that's
this is your mother, all right? Your mother
on my mother's side
was Vietnamese in the 1970s.
Uh huh. Yeah, and so this lady says, I think my mum is connected to you, and but just to be sure, why don't you upload your data to Gedmatch. Of course, at that point, I'd never heard what the hell Gedmatch was. So I just did as she asked, and I learned a long time to do what I'm told. And so I uploaded it to there, and then it kind of, I went on there, and it didn't, it's a bit of a clunky website. Graphically, it doesn't look amazing. And so half of it, I was like, okay, fine, and left it at that. And it confirmed that her mother was, in fact, my half-sister, and we communicated. And so I found out where she lives, and thought nothing of it. So
and we should be clear to folks that this is not Lisa we're talking about.
This is not Lisa, half-sister. No. Mm-hmm. Another half-sister who now lives in Tacoma, I think. Yeah. And so then I didn't think much of it. We made a connection on via Facebook and Messenger, which is how everyone does it these days, and found out a little bit more about each other and on my mother's side. And then Lisa's email literally came out of the blue another day, and another sister or two sisters, which was quite a shock.
Yeah, all of a sudden you're collecting sisters left and right.
Well, quite.
That's great. Well, we will take a little break and come back and have more on this amazing story. Daryl Loudon and Lisa Welchman, they are brother and sister, and we will have more on the remarkable combination of serendipity and technology that led them to find out when we come back after this quick break. 410-662-8780. If you have a story to share about genetic testing or not, or question for Lisa or Daryl, our email midday@wipr.org, our Twitter handle @middaywipr. If you want to follow me, it's @TomHallWIPR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, my guest will be the Archbishop of Baltimore, William Laurie. We're going to talk about the Conference of Catholic Bishops, which took place in Baltimore last week, and the scandal of clergy child abuse that continues to dominate the headlines. A recent report by the Attorney General of Pennsylvania revealed more than 1,000 cases of abuse over the last several decades. The Maryland Attorney General, Brian Frosch, has vowed to look into abuse claims here in our state as well. So what are the Baltimore Archdiocese and the Vatican doing to be accountable to the victims, to identify and prosecute offenders, and to restore trust among the faithful? How do rules around celibacy and the ordination of women influence the culture within the church? And how do Catholics whose trust in the hierarchy of their church has been shaken have their confidence restored? We'll talk about it with Archbishop William Laurie when he's my guest tomorrow here on Midday. If you're just joining us today, my guests are Daryl Loudon of Kingston-upon-Thames in England and Lisa Welchman of Baltimore. He is in his 40s. She is in her 50s. Earlier this year, they found out that they have the same father. This happened when they submitted DNA for analysis in a couple of popular genetic databases. Have you used companies like Ancestry.com or 23andMe to find out about your genetic heritage? And if so, what did you find? And what's your take on the privacy issues that surround these high-tech procedures? Daryl Loudon joins us from the studios of the BBC in London. Lisa Welchman's here with me in Studio A. You are welcome to join us as well at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org. You can drop us a tweet as well @MiddayWIPR. So Lisa, you go to Gedmatch, you've got a name and an address of the person who is second most related to your father after you submitted your dad's genetic kit to this database. And you reached out to Daryl, you sent him an email, and you made contact. Then what happened?
He responded. I had this conversation with my sister, who isn't in Gedmatch, about what we maybe ought to do. And we decided that talking to him first would be good. One, we wanted to make sure he was okay, which I'm still not sure if you are, Daryl. But we wanted to make sure that he was an okay guy. And we wanted to know him. We were both sort of delighted, to be honest with you. I think we're both at a point in our life where that was really good. So we, that very same, maybe hours later, just sent him an email saying, hi, you're our brother. Do you want to talk to us?
Yeah. And Daryl, what was your reaction when you get this email out of the blue from this woman in Baltimore?
It was quite strange because, as I say, it came quickly on the heels of another email. And like you said before the break, oh my God, I'm just collecting sisters. And I think it was I was curious. I was like, okay, well, that's interesting, and it's two people. And I thought, well, in for a penny, in for a pound, and they'd reached out to me, and they made it quite clear, to be fair to them both, that there was no pressure on me to do anything, and it was, just an introductory email of, we'd like to know a little bit more about you and your story, but with no pressure at all. And I guess I didn't really know why they were on it at that point, but I responded straight away, and I think I messaged my sister and said, Hannah, I've got another sister. And so we went from there, and I think we very quickly... I think we was, battered emails back and forth, lots of them in a very short period of time. And, and it all kind of went from there.
And the parents you grew up with, did they have any information about your mother or about your so-called biological father? Had you discussed that with them? Did they have any insight when you became old enough for them to talk about what it meant for you to be adopted, etc.? What was that conversation like? Had you had any inkling of who your father or your mother were?
No, not at all. I mean, to be clear, my parents are both white, so from a very early age, they had to come clean, if you like, and they always explained to me who I was and where I came from, and showed me the newspaper clippings. I made the local news when they adopted me and brought me to Plymouth, and here's the adoption. And it, to be honest with you, Tom, it just seemed so far away. The likelihood of, just to look at me, I've clearly got a mixture of Black, Asian, and, but the likelihood that, a father would A, be aware of me or want to track me down, and or, an Asian mother having the money, the resources, whatever it is to do something about it, just seems so abstract. That I've always been content in my life of that's what my background was, but very blessed to have been adopted, and they were my parents. So they were always very open about it, but and they gave me as much information as we could. But I was always realistic that in those sort of situations where there's, if you like, a humanitarian crisis, that adoption agencies and the Red Cross and people like that, it's a bit like, finding a baby dumped at a hospital and you call it Baby Smith. So I had never had any inkling or idea what a real name might be. It turns out the surname I was given on the adoption papers is Nguyen, which is, I don't know if I pronounced it right, but effectively it's the equivalent of Smith in Vietnamese. So, from that, I deduced that, any real background or real names would be pretty futile, and I never had the energy or the inclination to find out any more. I was very satisfied with my life, quite frankly.
Yeah,
and considered myself very lucky.
And Lisa, you and your sister then consulted with Daryl and decided, made the decision to tell your father, because your father at this point had no idea that he had fathered a son back when he was in Vietnam on his second tour of duty,
right? Yes.
In 1972. So you had this conversation with him. What was that like?
It was an interesting conversation in a lot of the ways. It's maybe one of the harder things that I've done in my life. And it's also, I think, one of the greatest gifts. It was an opportunity for me to share an experience with him that, probably won't ever happen again. But it was super hard. I printed out the GEDmatch information, I highlighted it, I printed out the email exchange that we'd had with Daryl, I made notes on an index card just in case I was really nervous and forgot what I was going to say, and we'd exchanged pictures by then, so I actually printed out some photos, and they're kind of doppelgangers, so that was it, and I went in to tell that story to him, so that was really, it was poignant.
And it's certainly not the first time in history that a person goes off to war and has a liaison and it results in a child. This is an old story, actually.
Yep.
What was your dad's reaction?
He was shocked and surprised and I think ultimately pleased. I think you sort of make decisions about how you want to receive news like this. And everyone, I think, and maybe Daryl can disagree or agree with me on both sides of our family, have decided that this is a really good thing. It's great to make connections with people. My mother has shown a level of grace that I don't know if I would have been able to sum up in a situation like this, but he was really quite surprised. And it's given us an opportunity to talk about different aspects of our life as adult children. It's given me an opportunity to have a brother. I don't have a brother. I was the youngest. Now I'm not the youngest anymore, which means I've got somebody to boss. Although he gives me a run. He gives me a run for it. So it's been a heavy experience, but I think a poignant and an uplifting one as well.
And we should mention that your mom and dad are about to celebrate their 60th wedding anniversary.
Yes, next year they will have been married for 60 years, which is kind of amazing.
It is kind of amazing. And Daryl, how about you? You have a daughter, Tia, whom I've had the delightful pleasure of meeting. She's 19. What did she have to say about this? What was your reaction when you realized that your father now knew about you and you knew about him, and the possibility of meeting each other was very real?
Yeah, it's strange because my daughter's in the second year of university. She's at Northampton reading law. And so Lisa and I and Monique by that time had exchanged lots of emails. And she was
due. Remind folks that Monique is Lisa's sister. Mm-hmm.
Yes, sorry. And she was due to come home. So I went and picked her up and thought, well, I can't text her this sort of information. So we literally, she was moving back for the Christmas break. And I said, summer break, wasn't it? Summer break. And we stopped at the service station on the way home. And I said, oh, I've got some news to tell you. And she went, okay, what is that? Typical teenage sort of ambivalence, really. So I told her, and she was just, what, no way. And what? And they lived in Kingston and all of that. So she was very welcoming of it, as of Hannah and Juliet have just been incredible too. I mean, I'm forever grateful for that they actually bought the test for me, for goodness sake. And I think Hannah and I did have the conversation of, sadly, my parents are no longer with us. And, you know, we had the conversation of, you know, what would mum and dad think? And I think Hannah and Juliet were, you know, so mature over it. They were just like, well, firstly, it doesn't really matter because they're not here. You've got to do what you think's right. And for what it's worth, I think they'd be really happy. So it was not that I needed permission, if that makes sense, but it meant a lot to me what Hannah and Juliet thought and how they supported me with it, which was quite incredible.
Daryl Loudon joins us from London. Lisa Welchman's here with me in Studio A. They are brother and sister, a fact that they found out just a few months ago. They are in their 40s and 50s. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. Not unexpectedly, we have a whole bunch of people on the phone wanting to share their stories. Let's try to share a couple of them now. Let's start with Sarah in Baltimore. Welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me. I am 65 years old. I am a twin. My mother was told when we were born that we were fraternal, because I guess there were two placentas. I'm no doctor about this, but we grew up and we look a lot alike. And people kept on saying, you're identical. And I said, no, we are fraternal. And I decided finally to put this this dilemma to bed. I got 23andMe testing done, and then I mailed the test to my twin sister. And I'll be honest with you, my sister voted for Trump and I voted for who ran, but
Clinton.
Whatever. I voted for Clinton. So I said, we are definitely not, you know, identical. And so she took the test and we literally watched on our computers as it said 100% DNA match. So I'm 65 years old, and I now have an identical twin sister.
That's a great story. Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate that. Let's go to Andrew in Ellicott City. Andrew, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'm here now.
Yes, sir. What's on your mind, real quick?
Yes, I just wanted to share a story of our Ancestry.com adventure. About my daughter had gotten us into this, and about a year ago, she saw a match show up, was very close, biological match with a gentleman who didn't identify himself, but looked like a very close relative of mine. And she made, and I've had the DNA test too. And a month ago, a woman showed up with a similar profile on Ancestry, with the same kind of relationship to me and several of the relatives on my paternal grandparents' side. And lo and behold, she got in touch with my daughter got in touch with her, and we find out that we could verify that she and the gentleman we'd heard from before but didn't know who he was, they were biological siblings, but they were both fathered by my uncle, almost 99% sure, back in the 1940s.
Yeah, and it just came to light when they did this Ancestry.com testing. That's incredible. Great story, Andrew. Thank you so much. And Lisa, before we go to break, I want to tell folks about the other amazing coincidence of this. Here in Baltimore, we talk about it being Smaltimore because there's not 6 degrees of separation. There's like 2 degrees of separation. But once you figured out who Daryl was, you had been in touch, you traded pictures. And as you say, when you look at a picture of Daryl and a picture of your father, it is clear that they are related. But Daryl lives in Kingston upon Thames in London, or outside of London. This is an area of town, you know, or area of England you know quite well because of your son. Tell us that story.
Yes, my son Reese, oddly, in a very small to more moment, went to school in what he refers to as the Roland Park of London, which is Kingston upon Thames. So he went to Kingston University there, got his bachelor's and his master's degree. So I've spent the last 3 Christmases there, have been walking around. I know the town. I can take the bus. I've spent an awful lot of town in this really sort of peculiar place that one wouldn't necessarily go as a tourist all of the time. So when I sneakily Googled Daryl Loudon before I ever contacted him and saw that that's where he was from, I think that shocked me more than anything else, that it's almost as if we'd been trying to find each other and the city found us.
Yeah. And Daryl, in June of this year, Lisa and Reese and you met for the first time in person. What was that experience like?
Yeah, it was.
They came
surreal.
To Kingston. Yeah,
they came to Kingston. Well, after we'd exchanged the emails and Lisa had told her dad and what have you, she mentioned that Reese was only going to be over till July, and then she just offered in one of the messages, you know, it's going okay so far, no pressure, but do you think you would ever want to meet? And of course, I'd obviously been thinking the same thing. And I said, yeah. And my sister and Juliet said that they would support me if I wanted them to come over to go to Baltimore and visit. And I'm thinking, her son finishes in July. I bet I see her before then. And then, as luck would have it, literally a couple of days later, oh, I've got some air miles. I'm going to pop over the next weekend. Are you around? And so we did. Luckily, it coincided with my Tia being at home. And I said, okay, so we're going to do Sunday lunch, and one of the peculiar things that Reese has taken away from living in the UK is he likes Sunday roast, and we love Sunday roast. And so we were going to meet at a pub to do it, but I'm okay in the kitchen, and I said, well, before we all pay a lot of money for a roast dinner, why don't you just come to my house? So they came, and I just straight away, I think we just kind of clicked, and it wasn't an awkward. This is a complete stranger. I think because we'd already exchanged emails, and by that time Lisa had set up a Google Photos, so we'd all chipped in with photos about our background, and the conversation was really easy. Tia and Reese got on really well, and we had a fun afternoon. And it was really fun. It was really fun.
What a terrific Sunday roast! A brother meets a sister, a cousin meets a cousin, and everybody meets each other after this amazing coincidence of everybody being centered around the same place. We're going to take a break. We'll come back in a second. Daryl Loudon joins us from London. Lisa Welchman joins me here in the studio. When we come back, we'd like to hear more of your genealogical journeys with DNA. Testing at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And you can drop us a tweet as well, @MiddayWYPR. Before we go to break, on Mondays here on Midday, it's our practice to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence in our city in the previous week. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far in 2018, 274 people in Baltimore City have been victims of homicide. Last week, Baltimore police reported 7 victims. The names of 3 of them have not yet been released, but the 4 people who have been identified are Adam Taylor, age 57, Antoine Green, age 39, Brendan Michaels, age 43, and Daryl Yancey. He was 25 years old. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall, and if you've just joined us today, as families gather together in this Thanksgiving week, we're talking about finding family, and we're taking a look at the incredible potential of DNA testing in the vast uncharted territory surrounding privacy and the ethical ramifications of who has access and control over our genetic information. In 2015, the consumer genetic testing market was about $70 million. In the next 4 years, that market is expected to grow 5 times larger. My guests today each entered their DNA in a database to find out the kinds of things that most people hope to find out when they work with companies like Ancestry.com or 23andMe. They wanted to know what their ethnic heritage is and perhaps a little bit about what medical predispositions that they might have. Well, they found out a whole lot more. Daryl Loudon, an HR consultant near London, England, found out that he is the half-brother of Lisa Welchman, a tech expert who lives here in Baltimore. Daryl joins us from the studios of the BBC in London. Lisa is here with me in Studio A in Baltimore, and you are welcome to join us as well to share your story about genetic testing and how you might have come to know your family past or present. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. Let's go to the phones to Marina in Nottingham. Marina, welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to make a comment about sort of like the other side of DNA testing. Of course, I like took the test like everyone else, thinking I was going to find some like long-lost sister or something happy like that. And so growing up, obviously, my father's black and my mom's white, so I was just thought I was mixed my whole life. When I got my test results back, I was blown away to find out that I'm really only 21% from, like, Africa, and everything else is, like, European or whatever. But, you know, it's been the cause of, like, kind of like a major identity crisis, you know, because I'm not who, you know, I thought I was my whole life. So I just wanted to, like, put a little bit of a different perspective out there for people.
Yeah.
Because I kind of feel sort of, like, alone because everyone has these happy stories and mine is kind of not the same.
That's interesting, Miriam. May I ask how old you are?
I had to think about it. I'm 29.
Uh-huh. And so for most of your 29 years, you assumed you were half and half, African-American, half Caucasian.
Exactly.
And when you got the results back, how did they make the determination of this specific percentage determination? I mean, do they explain how they come to this 21%?
Well,
I mean, if your dad and your mom are together, how does that not turn out to be 50-50? I don't understand that.
I don't understand either, but I kind of did a little bit of research on it, and I still don't quite understand the biology behind it, but so I'm not quite sure. It's kind of like split what people say. I would love to know more about like the science behind it and how that's possible. Or if, I don't know, maybe my whole life has been a lie. I don't know.
Yeah, interesting. Well, that's an interesting conundrum that you're faced with. And Lisa Welchman, what's your take?
I'm not an expert on all of these databases, but I do know that most African Americans are of mixed heritage to begin with. So I don't know about her dad or what he is. I mean, I was interested. My ethnicity breakdown, I think, is about 80% like sub-Saharan African, and then 20% a mix of other things, a little teeny bit Inuit of all things, and then European. And so there's a lot of really sad stories about, you know, rape and in the slave history of the U.S. about why that's happened. And I think it's really poignant for people in the U.S., for African Americans in particular, dealing with that story and ingesting it. And so in a lot of ways, these DNA tests sort of bring that to the surface in a way that cannot always be pleasant, I think.
Yeah. We understand that the matches produced for non-white customers in these genetic testing agencies, and anybody with lineage traced outside of Europe, those matches are typically far less accurate because they draw from a much smaller subset of DNA samples available for comparison. So that's part of the reason. It's a lot more complicated for an African-American person to trace her ancestry and lineage than it is for a Caucasian whose family all came from, you know, Ireland or Germany or Italy or something.
Right. Well, there's some practical concerns, which is at some point, even if you knew who all of these people were, you run up into that bank, that wall of slavery, where there just is no documentation. So there's that practical component. And in fact, part of the reason why I had done multiple tests was that someone had mentioned somewhere that I had read that MyHeritage might actually be a better database for an African American to use because of the data set that they used, if you're actually really trying to find out about your African American heritage. So there's some complexity in that. And I think there's a downside to that, but there's an upside to it as well, which is there is an opportunity for us to understand how we're all related and how we're all connected, an opportunity for us to start a new dialogue about who we are as a human people.
Yeah. And Daryl Loudon, you met, you and your daughter met Lisa and her son in June of this year. And then in August, you came to the States, you came to Baltimore, and you met your father for the first time. And so did your daughter, Tia. That's when I got to meet you. And we should tell listeners that Lisa and I have known each other for 17 years. And I was delighted to meet you and your daughter. What was it like for you to meet your dad, an African-American former military officer here in America?
It was quite surreal, really. I think the odd thing is, it sounds so obvious to everyone else, but actually looking at somebody that looks like you, for obvious reasons, being, you know, being brought up by, you know, my parents, who obviously I don't look like at all, that was the weird thing. And I think early in our email exchanges, I have a healthy cynicism of many things in life, if I'm honest. And the early email exchanges, we were talking about the results and what have you. But I think when we, I mean, for Lisa, obviously, because I didn't realise that she'd been Googling me. But so she obviously knew that before, what I looked like. But certainly when, you know, I was talking with colleagues at work who were all quite amazed by the story as well. But the clincher, clearly, for everybody is once we saw a picture of Garland, that would then you're like, wow. So then it was no doubt. So that was the most surreal experience, I think, of seeing someone that looks like you. And I was curious of how, in the whole nature nurture debate, I suppose, you know, my mannerisms I would have thought I got from my parents who brought me up, and, you know, how I act and behave. But Lisa had observed, I think, when we first met, and then we also went to a pub a couple of nights later. Lisa and her friend observed, you know, you do things that like dad, and like, well, that's really weird. So, of course, so that was curious for me, just to see, you know, what mannerisms and behaviours I had that were clearly genetic rather than sort of trained or learned, if that makes sense.
Nature and nurture. And Lisa, the racial dimension of this really is fascinating and interesting. I mean, you and Daryl found that you share great interest in music, for example, so that there could be a genetic reason for that. But also you as a tech entrepreneur in a very male-dominated, white-dominated world, and Daryl as a black Vietnamese child growing up in a white family and a white culture and a white school, you both had that very interesting parallel to your life experience to it. So it's not just the nature. The nurture part of it is even, as it turns out, somewhat parallel.
Yeah, I think it's one of the most fascinating things, and I don't think I've said this to Daryl before, about knowing Daryl, is to see someone who looks very much like me, and he and I actually look alike.
Yes,
we really strongly look like siblings.
You do.
We look good, right, Daryl?
We do. Well, one of us does.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not sure which one it is. But anyhow, is to see his experience growing up looking as he does, but growing up in England instead of in the U.S., and considering what his experience would have been like growing up black in the U.S. during that same time frame versus that. And there are just certain burdens that he doesn't carry, and stories that he doesn't share, and things that he doesn't have to sort of look over his shoulder about that I'm with. And then there's a gender issue. I'm a woman. And so there are just a lot of different components of that have been really fascinating and to see and watch.
And Daryl, do you have any concerns about the fact that now that you've submitted this DNA sample and it's out there, it's on GEDmatch, it's with Ancestry, that your privacy can in any way be compromised? Because as it turns out, the small print for Ancestry says, you know, Basically, we don't own it. However, we can do whatever we want to with it. And one of the ways they make money is they sell this information writ large, not necessarily individuals, but they sell large bunches of data to pharmaceutical companies to figure out how to develop drugs for certain conditions. What are your thoughts about that as you've been through this process?
I'll be honest with you, Tom, it's not something I really thought about in any great depth. I think I literally came just from the ancestry direction. I did a little bit of work a few years ago just trying to track my family in the UK. And both my parents had grown up in Plymouth, but obviously we'd gone back several generations. And along that journey, other people are contacting you, I think, five generations ago we might be related. And I think there is a trade-off. If you're curious about your lineage, at some point you've got to give over something. I guess the thing with the DNA is that you are giving over a different amount of data. You're not just sharing wedding certificates or birth certificates, but I think that I didn't have a problem, and it wasn't something I thought of when I did the test. It was, let's just do the test, find out who you are. And from that, we've all just been incredibly lucky and found out this connection. In terms of what the companies do with that data, I'll be honest with you, it's not something that keeps me awake at night.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa, you're in the tech business. I mean, you know this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched, we're watching in the news as all of the social media big companies are basically being abusive with the trust of their customers. I work with a lot of large companies, and, I know that it's usually negligence. They didn't have the foresight to consider what might happen. And so my biggest concern around this is I understand when I'm stepping into this space what I am doing. Like, I am an informed person. What I'm not certain about is whether or not the companies are really taking a mature approach about what they're doing, or really projecting out in the future of what the possibilities might be for the data. And so sometimes I'm not sure that they're quite with it.
We have time for a very quick call from Al in Abington. Al is gone, but his question was, I wonder if you've heard of RootsWeb, which is part of Ancestry.com's free genetic database. Is that familiar to you, Lisa?
No, but I'm not an Ancestry.com girl, so I'm not that one. I'm not familiar with.
Is that something that's come across your notice, Daryl, by any chance?
No, not at all. The only one I've heard of is Ancestry.com, and that's the several adverts for that in the UK. So I hadn't really thought of any other matching website.
Mm-hmm. So we are out of time here, Daryl, but let me give you the last word here. You've now clearly gotten a wonderful relationship with your sister, Lisa. What's your relationship with your dad like? Your biological father.
My biological father. I think we've exchanged some messages, and I spent some time with him. There were when I came over in August, and he reminds me a lot of my dad. And they're the same age, or they would be the same age, would my dad be around. And both from a services background, so quite similar in their outlook. It was like talking to him, as strange as that might seem.
Yeah. Well, I very much appreciate your giving us the time to let us talk to you today. And I'm delighted for you and your sister and your family, and appreciate both of you sharing your stories. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Tom. You're welcome.
Daryl Loudon, he's a former musician in the Welsh Guards Band in England. He's currently working as an HR consultant outside of London. And Lisa Welchman is an internationally acclaimed expert in digital governance who's based here in Baltimore. Her latest book is called Managing Chaos, Digital Governance by Design. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow on Midday, my guest for the hour will be Baltimore Archbishop William E. Lorry. The National Conference of Catholic Bishops met in Baltimore last week amid continuing revelations about the extent to which Catholic clergy have abused children and adults, and continuing controversy about how church leadership is responding to those crimes. Archbishop William Lorry joins me to take my questions and yours tomorrow here on Midday. Thanks to the Diz for supplying lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner, with breakfast served on the weekends. They can be found on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall. Appreciate your listening. Have a great day.